Hello, Exopolitics listeners. I'm R.V. Romero, Stellar Artistic Director of Exopolitics Radio. I'd like to thank you all for listening to our show and for taking an interest in the evolution of our planet and our species through Exopolitics Radio and the study of law and order in the universe. For over a year now, I've enjoyed working closely with your elusive host, Alfred Weber, on this fine production that we're proud to broadcast on a weekly basis and post free of charge on our website. Currently, I'm happy to say that in the last 90 days, ExopoliticsRadio.com has been visited by people in over 56 countries and 492 cities around the globe, including all 50 states in the U.S. During that time, we've averaged over 5,000 podcast downloads per show, and we're adding listeners every week with affiliates at Paranormal Radio, the Revere Radio Network, and most recently, Kansas City Online Radio. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you an update on how our show is progressing, and also to let you know that indeed, the number of intelligent people here on Earth who are catching on to the fact that there are other intelligent life forms in the universe is growing. And Exopolitics Radio is proud to be on the cutting edge of this revelation by reporting news and providing the insight and perspectives that you can't find anywhere else on the radio, in the newspapers, or on the television. We want to continue bringing you Exopolitics Radio both online and on air free of charge, as we always have, because we believe in the message and the content. However, as a studio and production team, we do have routine expenses which must be maintained in order to do so. It pains us to ask, and I promise we won't do it often, but if every listener online donated $1 a month, that would completely cover our production costs for the show and the immense amount of time spent doing research, interviews, and production time given graciously by our host. Of course, not every listener is going to be able to donate $1 or donate on a monthly basis, so if you could consider donating a little bit more, that would be a tremendous help and allow us to continue adding more and more affiliates, creating new programs, interviews, and materials, and most importantly, continue broadcasting this message of hope and truth around the globe and the universe. So whatever the outcome, I can promise you that we will continue working to bring you a unique and sincere program week in and week out, 12 months a year. So we thank you for your support of Exopolitics Radio. Please remember to go to www.exopoliticsradio.com and click on the donate menu option for more information. Thank you very much, and now back to the show.
The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are those of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of 1480 KPHX or our sponsors.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, KPHX Phoenix, 1480 AM, www.1480kphx.com. Our Exopolitics Radio audio archives, which are freely available to the public as a world resource and treasure as we navigate the decade of contact, are at www.exopoliticsradio.com. And we urge you to visit them and to go into as many programs as you want, old programs, new programs, season one, season two. I'm your ever-present host, Alfred Weber, and today we are continuing with our series on extraterrestrials and the environment, specifically on extraterrestrials signaling to us on the particular dangers of nuclear power, nuclear power plants. Nuclear power is a low-level nuclear war against the biosphere, against the surrounding population, against, by some evidence, inner-city African-American populations who are fed milk from dairy herds that feed next to nuclear power plants, thereby ingesting all of that ionizing radiation and passing that on through the milk to the population that drinks the milk and bringing all of the health hazards that ionizing radiation from nuclear power plants brings, including increased cancer, diabetes, etc. And just look at the diabetes rates amongst African Americans, and you will notice from a public health standards that it is, in effect, a diabetes emergency. Well, today we're continuing our interview with Remy Chevalier, an environmentalist as well as a person who has been observing the interactions between extraterrestrials and nuclear power plants. Now, what we'd like to do is to begin examining, just for the record, the actual lists of interactions between extraterrestrial vehicles, apparent extraterrestrial vehicles, and UFOs. And if you go to the reports, you can actually see that these are probably extraterrestrial vehicles and not, in many cases, what they call ARVs, in other words, alien reproduction vehicles. And you can find this at the UFO Intelligence Summary produced by the Nuclear Connection Project, which reports many of the interactions between extraterrestrial vehicles and either nuclear power plants or nuclear weapons facilities. This is produced by NICAP.org, and we will have it posted at www.exopolitics.com. So this spans from 1944 to 1998, and I'm sure that you will have find many updates. But if we start in September 1944, right at the dawn of the nuclear age at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, where the what became the Atomic Energy Committee, well, we had a metal tube, often the form that an extraterrestrial vehicle takes, hovering over the gaseous diffusion plant there, the nuclear plant. In mid-July 1945 at Hanford, Washington, an extraterrestrial vehicle was tracked by radar over the Atomic Energy Commission plant. F-84 fighters were scrambled. On April 5, 1948, at White Sands, New Mexico, a team watched extraterrestrial vehicles performing very amazing maneuvers. In July 1948 in Pasco, Washington, pilot reports a dome disc, apparently an extraterrestrial vehicle. There's an extensive report on it over the Atomic Energy Commission area in the state of Washington. In 1948, on December 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 11th, 13th, 14th, 20th, and 28th, at Los Alamos, New Mexico, you had pilots observing apparent extraterrestrial craft. On April 14th, 1949, at Aray, New Mexico, you had extraterrestrial vehicles were tracked at the White Sands Proving Ground, having to do with nuclear weapons. On May 21st, 1949, at Moses Air Force Base at Hanford, Washington, an extraterrestrial disc hovered over the restricted airspace over the atomic energy plant. Remember, by the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication, all UFO encounters are a form of symbolic communication between a higher intelligent source or a different intelligent source in our human civilization. It's in the form of a dream. A dream is a symbolic communication from your subconscious mind to your conscious mind. So there's all sorts of communications packed into each of these, and you can go to the website and you can click on the report and go more in depth. And by the way, take your dream dictionaries there. On June 29th, 1949, at White Sands, New Mexico again, we had a naval rocket expert observing a extraterrestrial craft, apparently a silvery disc. In the fall of 1949, at a key atomic base, we had five metallic objects traverse 300 miles across the radar scope. On April 27, 1950, at White Sands, New Mexico, we had cine theodolite film taken by a camera tracking station that tracked these extraterrestrial craft. On May 24, 1950, Queen Victoria's birthday, we had at White Sands, New Mexico, a cine theodolite film taken by the camera tracking station tracking these objects. On July 30th, 1950, at the Hanford Atomic Energy Plant in Hanford, Washington, an extraterrestrial craft over the atomic energy plant triggered a scramble of an F-94. On October 13th, 1915, that's the anniversary of the program on which this Exopolitics radio program is airing, at the Oak Ridge, Tennessee, there were sightings of extraterrestrial craft by the Atomic Energy Commission security patrols. On October 20th, 1950, at the Oak Ridge, Tennessee plant again, extraterrestrial craft were sighted over the control zone of the Atomic Energy Commission plant on November 10th, 1950. At Oak Ridge, Tennessee, again, there was background radiation registered as the extraterrestrial craft entered the control area. On December 5th, 1950, at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, the FBI documented a possible radar jamming reported. On December 6, 1950, there was a northeastern U.S. national alert when the radars picked up possible unknowns. Remember, this was all during the atomic era when the U.S. was developing its nuclear and hydrogen bomb program, and it was in 1954 that the Advanced Ethical Extraterrestrials met with reportedly President Eisenhower to urge the U.S. to abandon and abolish its nuclear weapons program. On December 14, 1950, at the Oak Ridge, Tennessee, there were radar targets of extraterrestrial craft over the Atomic Energy Commission base. On December 18, 1950, at the Oak Ridge, Tennessee plants, there were radar and visual sightings over the Atomic Energy Commission plant. On December 18, 1950, at the National NEPA at the Oak Ridge, Tennessee plant, there was an Army report of extraterrestrial vehicles that was sent to the FBI. On December 20th, 1950, at the Oak Ridge, Tennessee plant, there were radar trackings of an extraterrestrial vehicle. On October 20th, 1951, at Yucca Flats, there were squadrons of extraterrestrial vehicles over an atomic test site. At that time, they were having tests of atomic bombs, for which the U.S. population is now suffering, with epidemics of cancer, with epidemics of obesity, with epidemics of diabetes. And all of this comes from the above ground and underground nuclear tests that were performed on U.S. soil. On December 7th, 1951, at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, a 20-foot square, a UFO was observed by the guards there. F-47s were scrambled. On May 10th, 1952, there was a UFO incident at Savannah River Atomic Energy Plant. In the summer of 1952, at Kirtland Air Force Base, New Mexico, there was the famous Air Force F-86 shooting incident with an extraterrestrial craft. And that was over Kirtland Air Force Base. On June 21st, 1952, at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, there were radar and visual sightings over the Atomic Energy Plant of extraterrestrial craft. On July 5th, 1952, over the Hanford Atomic Plant in Washington, state of Washington, four pilots reported an extraterrestrial vehicle hovering over the Atomic Energy Plant. On September 1952, in Operation Main Brace, the North Sea area, there were extraterrestrial vehicles over this military exercise. In December 10, 1952, in Washington State, there were radar and visual of extraterrestrial vehicles over the Hanford Atomic Energy Plant. On July 19, 1953, in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, there were black extraterrestrial vehicles maneuvered over the area near an F-86. On April 7, 1954, the USS Curtis, which was carrying nuclear weapons, was buzzed by an extraterrestrial vehicle. I mean, how much more direct can you get? We're continuing here. This is like the honor roll of the extraterrestrials that we're reading here. They're trying to signal to humanity and to the U.S. military, hey, listen, this is very dangerous stuff. You kids have discovered the matches. You can destroy the biosphere. You can destroy humanity. You can destroy all living things, and you can do damage to the ecology in which we live. On October 1st, 1957, at Shippingport, Pennsylvania, an extraterrestrial craft circled the atomic plant. On November 4th, 1957, Kirtland Air Force Base, New Mexico, an egg-shaped extraterrestrial craft hovered over that base, military base. On November 6th, 1957, at Radium Springs, New Mexico, a radar and extraterrestrial vehicle rose vertical from the mountaintop at Radium Springs, New Mexico. February 1961, in Western Europe, in France, which is one of the, France is probably the most nuclear power planted, you know, they have more nuclear power plants per capita than any other country on the planet, and a UFO vehicle was observed near a nuclear power station. In the summer, of 1961 near Moscow, there was a report of Russian tactical missiles being fired on an extraterrestrial vehicle. On August 7, 1962, at Oracle, Arizona, there was an extraterrestrial vehicle which hovered over the Titan missile silo, and jets, fighter jets, were sent up. On October 1962, under NORAD Reg 2 near Palermo Air Force Base, New York, they scrambled fighters after them, and this was during the Cuban Missile Crisis. In 1962, there was an unidentified Air Force test range. An extraterrestrial vehicle blocked tracking of a U.S. rocket. On February 7, 1963, at Charlottesville, Virginia, fighter planes were scrambled after extraterrestrial vehicles were seen sighting over a intercontinental missile site. On April 30, 1964, at the Stallion site, New Mexico, there were two fighters scrambled after radar visual confirmation, and the extraterrestrial vehicle sent a proper IFF. On May 2, 1964, at White Sands, New Mexico, automatic radar tracked extraterrestrial vehicles on tape. In that case, there was a phony IFF sent. September 15, 1964, at Big Sur, California, an extraterrestrial vehicle destroyed an Atlas warhead, and this was filmed by a military tracking crew. In other words, an extraterrestrial vehicle destroyed an intercontinental missile warhead, and that is an intercontinental missile warhead that's supposed to be bringing nuclear weapons, you know, all these great nuclear weapons to destroy it. One humanity destroys another humanity, destroys the biosphere, destroys all living things with this incredible amount of depleted uranium that is in those nuclear weapons as tamping around a relatively small plutonium core. The scientist Michio Kaku says that it is very rare to find a planet inhabited by human beings, humanoid beings like ourselves, where we have an intelligent species killing members of the same species. We are really like at the bottom of the barrel of intelligent species through this permanent war economy. And we're locked in there, folks, because of a relatively narrow permanent war economy and international war crimes racketeering organization centered around secret networks and principally around banking networks around the city of London, a 677-acre quasi-independent jurisdiction at the center of London ruled over by 12 banks, headed by the Bank of England and mediated by the House of Rothschild, whose net worth is $100 trillion. And in the U.S., it's the Rockefeller interests, which are sort of the front for the enforcement front for the city of London. The Rockefeller interests, independent valuation is about $10 trillion. And that goes back, it was the Rockefellers were originally funded to serve as the agents of the Rothschilds in the city of London here. They're the ones that got the bank panic of 1907 going, artificially manipulated it in order to set up the establishment of the Federal Reserve Bank in 1913 to make money their private property instead of money being a public utility, which is what it should be. June 5th, 1965, at Lynn Nahant, Massachusetts, there were extraterrestrial vehicles over a General Electric nuclear facility. There, General Electric, again owned by the Rockefeller interests, who, in a vertical monopoly, the Rockefellers own a great deal of the world's uranium, which then they own the nuclear power plants, and then the Rockefeller interests, through owning the defense industries, own the atomic weapons plants, and then through owning the both the Democrat and the Republican parties, they own the politicians. So it's like, you know, it's the how the permanent war economy works to implement war. Well, we've come to the end of this brief section of the extraterrestrials' honor roll and the permanent war economy's dishonor roll, and we're stopping at September 15th, 1964. And this list goes on through 1998, and we're 10 years beyond that into 2007. So we're now going to transition to part two of our interview with environmentalist Remy Chevalier on extraterrestrials and the environment. Why is it that all the French guys like Remy Chevalier and Alfred Lambert Weber get to do all this exciting work? I wonder. Extraterrestrials and the environment. Nuclear power. Stopping the relicensing of Indian Point nuclear power facility in New York, where a half-mile wide extraterrestrial craft made quite an impression in 1984. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you. This is your host, Alfred Weber. Would you like to download instantly the book Exopolitics by Alfred Weber that founded the field of exopolitics and was the cosmic trigger to a paradigm shift of opening to extraterrestrial civilizations? Would you like to download a CD-ROM of Exopolitics Radio Season 1 uncut version with interviews you have not heard on air? You can do so now by going right now to our website, www.exopoliticsradio.com, and downloading. There is no shipping, there is no waiting. Downloading the book Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe by Alfred Weber, and the CD-ROM Exopolitics Radio Season 1 Uncut Version. You'll be helping yourself, Exopolitics, and Exopolitics Radio into Season 2. Thank you.
I'm so afraid.
I need to lose weight. I wish I could stop smoking.
I have so much stress.
I'm in pain.
Why am I sad?
I need to perform better.
I feel like there's no way out.
If you or someone you know needs help making healthy and significant life changes, they may benefit from hypnotherapy and life coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle. Hypnosis uses the power of the subconscious mind for recovery and health. It strengthens your natural psychic abilities, as hypnotherapy removes blocks and clarifies your inner knowledge. It allows you to move forward. Coaching offers a practical framework which strengthens the life changes you desire.
To find out more regarding hypnotherapy, life coaching, exoconsciousness, and how to achieve an integrated, peaceful, healthy, and harmonious state of being, call Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle at 602-615-1485. That's 602-615-1485. Or log on to www.rebeccahardcastle.com.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Tonight, we're continuing with part two of our series on extraterrestrials and the environment, nuclear power, which is actually a low-level nuclear war against the environment and against the population, all living things. A court has found it to be, in effect, ecocide, genocide, and omnicide. And we have again as our guest Remy Chevalier, who founded the Echo Saloon at the Environmental Nightclub Wetlands in 1989. He is the editor at large and webmaster for Electrifying Times, a magazine dedicated to electric vehicles on newsstands since 1993. An investigative journalist and researcher, Remy contributes to dozens of blogs and magazines. With 30 years of experience as a music promoter, event organizer, and environmental activist, Remy created the Rock the Reactors campaign in April 2006 to bring national attention to the fight to shut down Indian Point nuclear reactor using viral marketing techniques, securing the participation of dozens of green product sponsors. The Bruce Apple in Peekskill, New York, has dedicated an entire section of their bookshop to Remy's Environmental Library Fund. And continuing with our analysis here on Exopolitics Radio, you may recall the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication, and that is that all extraterrestrial encounters, UFO encounters, are in effect contextual communications, symbolic communications from an other intelligent source to ourselves. And in our last radio program, we were examining an encounter with an apparent extraterrestrial vehicle at least a half mile in span that took place with multiple witnesses at multiple sites, including security guards and police and citizens, that took place on the night of July 24th, 1984. And at the same time now, in 2007, Remy, who is on the board of Fuse, is involved in blocking the relicensing of the Indian Point nuclear reactor complex as being unsafe and a danger to the environment and to the population. Welcome, Remy, to this new terrain here of extraterrestrials and the environment.
Hi, Alfred.
Can you update us on anything that has occurred since our last program in terms of the Indian Point nuclear reactor?
Well, we're filing for contentions. We're basically filing a lot of legal documents that are pointing out to what we consider to be dangers and security risks at the plant, and with experts and lawyers. And, you know, then we're just, there's the deadline of November 30th for us to get all this paperwork in, and it takes a lot of manpower and energy, and, you know, we're needing volunteers, obviously, and donations. So if I can, it's fuseusa.org, and there you'll see the names of the people that are on the board of the directors and also the board of advisors. And we can right now use all the help that we can get, because the company that owns the power plant is obviously very wealthy, and they can afford big, large advertising campaigns and outreach into the community. And we're a grassroots effort, and our resources are limited, but we think we're on the side of right in this particular situation. And so I'm just sending out a plea here to your listeners.
Well, you know, going back to the sighting in July 24th of 1984, that's a kind of a symbolic date in itself, at least the year. I'm reading here from an article on the sighting, and a telephone conversation with the manager of the then manager of the Indian Point nuclear reactor, trying to get a meeting with the guards who had actually seen the event and seen the extraterrestrial vehicle. And it goes on, after about an hour on the phone, the manager finally agreed to talk to us, to let us talk to the guards. He said, quote, "We would really like to keep the entire incident quiet," the manager said, as though he could. "The reactor is highly controversial, and we know that the opponents against nuclear power in the area will use the sighting to their advantage. They might claim that our security people are at risk because they reported a flying saucer."
This was back in 1984, and I think the prevalent understanding back then of this type of experience and what we know today, you know, with TV shows like The X-Files, and a lot of that now has gotten really into the vernacular. It's almost okay. It's like coming out of the closet with your UFO experience.
Oh, sure. But the question that I was going to ask is, what is controversial about a nuclear power plant? Tell us some of the health effects, just very, very briefly and very quickly.
Well, I'll give you a scenario. If, for example, this almost, as a matter of fact, has happened quite a few times these last couple of summers in Europe. A lot of these reactors are water-cooled, meaning that you're okay as long as you have water cooling the system. If suddenly there's no more water because of a drought in the river that these plants happen to be built next to so they can use the water from these rivers, or if there's a blockage, or if there's a system failure, if there's no more water accessible or available, then these radioactive elements get extraordinarily hot. And this is how you can end up with a situation like the one that happened, you know, at Three Mile Island or at Chernobyl. These are not really isolated incidents, you know, despite what the nuclear power industry will want you to believe. There's been a lot of close calls over the years. Just imagine that the fuel that is contained inside these rods, and I'm not really, you know, the technical expert about this. I mean, if people really want to know, they can contact Sherwood Martinelli, for example, who's working very, very hard on these issues, or the experts that we have. This is not my forte. I'm just on the board of advisors. I'm a marketing guy. I'm an idea PR guy, and I'm out there basically trying to spread this information. But if any one of these fuel rods happens to be uncovered, you know, without the protection of water, without the protection of all this concrete, literally everything that's in a 25-mile radius would, in the space of a few days, die. It's as simple as that. It's the most toxic substance on Earth. It was artificially man-made. The uranium grade that is used as fuel does not exist in nature. It doesn't come out of the ground that way. It goes through a very intensive enrichment process, which takes a long time and a lot of energy, and they refine it and they enrich it until they get to uranium-235, which is a very, very, very noxious substance, which has to be shielded every single inch of the way. You touch that element, you have practically contracted cancer instantaneously, and you have a few days to live. And they are using this as a fuel. They're using this as something that literally, you know, hundreds of people inside these plants have to constantly keep protected. And the only thing that keeps it from reaching critical mass is this water that surrounds it. If the water evaporates, if the water leaks, if the water stops, if the environment around it gets too hot because of a drought, because of some kind of shortage, you end up with a situation where you have to get rid of this stuff immediately somehow and shield it and encase it. And right now the waste from this fuel is being encased and stored on site at these plants out in the open, you know, vulnerable to anyone who basically wants to do a terrorist act. And, of course, security in these facilities is now extremely tight. We're spending literally billions of dollars every year just to keep security going with whack and hut so that these facilities are safe from being penetrated by potential terrorists who would want to possess this fuel for nefarious purposes. And it's just a quagmire, an index of complexity that you know, with one redundant system after another, after another, after another, it's gotten to be so expensive and so complicated and so time-consuming that is it worth it? No. Can we produce this electricity by a lot of other means, alternative means, which are safer, calmer, quieter, cleaner? Absolutely. If the solar energy or the wind power industry was getting the billions of dollars in subsidies that the nuclear power industry is getting for its cleanups, we just spent $300 million down in New Orleans to clean up the mess that was created at two nuclear power plants right there that were flooded by the hurricane. And every time there's an accident of one kind or another, these plants are not responsible. Who pays for the cleanup? The taxpayer does. You know, there's a Price Waterson Act. It basically makes these power plants not accountable for acts of God, which is basically a failure, like a meltdown. And if anything happened, they have no accountability. And they don't have any accountability. They don't have any accountability for the waste. We still don't know what we're going to do with it. We can't take it to Nevada because everybody in Nevada doesn't want it there, because the facility that they spent billions to dig to put this waste into, we now find out, is right on the hairline of an earthquake fault, which means that it could very well, you know, just crack. And the whole thing gets to be mind-boggling, which is, I think, why a lot of people kind of want to just escape from this issue, because it's gotten so complex that it takes people that study this nearly every single waking day of their life to make heads and tails out of it. And because it's an industry and these people get paid every day to go to work 9 to 5 to run this industry, you know, they're now part of a corporate culture, which is the nuclear industry. And anybody that is on the outside that sees this with a bird's eye view from a different angle, sees it from the angle of the Native Americans that were right there when they were mining for this uranium and making all these people sick. The people right now, because it's been out of the public's eye, don't understand that nuclear radiation and uranium are probably the worst pollutants ever. They're the worst type of toxic waste that there is. And it's not the solution to global warming, unlike what the nuclear power industry now is spending a lot of money doing by putting these full-page ads in newspapers all around the country trying to convince the general public that nuclear power is the solution to global warming and that it's clean and green. It's not. And if you go back to the roots of the environmental movement, it was the anti-nuclear movement, as well as being caring for the earth. And the two go hand in hand together. We don't need nuclear power. It's a constant threat. It's a constant source of worry. It's an exorbitant amount of money to spend. And that's a position that I've held, you know, all my life. And now we have an opportunity with the relicensing of this plant to finally make a point and make a dent so that we can bring the nuclear power industry to sit down at the table with a lot of people that are on the other side of this fence and actually start to get some answers.
Just to jump in here, I was personally shocked. First, I'd like to say on the health point of view that studying the work of independent scientist Lorraine Murray, with whom I toured Asia, and she was able to demonstrate these things, and I'll just say them very quickly. Number one, if you take the map, for example, of the United States, and you plot where the nuclear power plants are, and then you plot where incidence of women's breast cancer are, they're almost identical.
Yep.
So likewise, she and another colleague have uncovered evidence that milk from dairy herds adjacent to nuclear power plants is being shipped to inner city African-American communities, and these communities now have a higher incidence of leukemia and cancer. So that seems like intentional genocide. But you can go to www.LorraineMorait.com for more information on this. That is, there's a really dark side connecting intentional depopulation and nuclear power plants. Both the Three Mile Island and especially the Chernobyl, which some expert opinion states was actually intentional sabotage. It was intentional sabotage in order to radiate the terrain and the civilian population in that area as an act of environmental warfare. There are various theories of who was the power behind bringing down the Chernobyl plant that has had a continuing devastating effect on that sector of Europe down through France. I mean, our understanding is that even the vineyards of Europe, the House of Rothschild, Châteauneuf du Pape, which is now selling, you know, extremely cheaply, that all of these French wines are now radioactive. And it all comes from the Chernobyl meltdown, and that you can take public health statistics, incidences of everything from diabetes to cancer to leukemia, breast cancer, and you can follow the trail of the radiation leaks from the Chernobyl meltdown. So this, if it was an intentional sabotage, it was an incredible act of environmental warfare. So there we have the correlations of the extraterrestrial vehicles with the Three Mile Island. I'm just looking here, March 4th, 1988, East Lake, Ohio, triangular objects headed toward the Perry Nuclear Power Station. October 13, 1983, Gaffney, South Carolina, unidentified fly object near the Cherokee Nuclear Station. November 22, 1975, Savannah, Georgia, pilots observe UFOs near nuclear power plant. I'm just reading the kind of the summary headlines here. Remy, as a person who, you know, very unusual in the anti-nuclear power plant area, a committed environmentalist anti-nuke person who is also extraterrestrially aware, give us your best opinion on what the strategies of the extraterrestrials here are in bringing in their vehicles over nuclear power plants.
I don't know if they have a strategy or not. I think they're probably, these intelligences are concerned by the nature of the radiation and how it probably affects their own living environment and making sure that it's not going to, you know, pollute or intrude into their own realities. We're only just now starting to even scratch at the surface of what the fabric of space-time is made out of. And obviously when you start to tamper with the elements the way you do by creating these extremely radioactive substances, it's hard to say. I mean, obviously I'm not in their place. I mean, we're just beginning to understand what the nature of these entities may be. It just demonstrates to me that there is deep concern, because it's been evident from the way that sightings have been tabulated by MUFONs and other organizations that have taken on the responsibility to try to keep track of when humans witness such phenomena in the sky or crafts or encounters, that at times there is increased concentration of activity around nuclear facilities, whether they're nuclear power plants, whether they're defense bases. There's a lot of sightings within the military. A lot of it obviously doesn't go reported because soldiers have learned to pretty much keep their mouth shut. But it's there. On an environmental standpoint, we know that it's a substance that is extremely toxic. They're using it now. They're using the byproduct of nuclear power plants for making uranium shell casings. And right now, the Middle East and Iraq is absolutely littered with exploded, depleted uranium shells. And there are reports coming back that literally tens of thousands of people are getting radiation sicknesses from having handled debris from these explosives or living in areas where these explosives have been shattered. They're used because it's a metal that's extremely piercing, and it gives you instantaneous penetration into tanks, so it makes it very easy to destroy enemy tanks. But what it leaves behind is literally a trail of death for anyone who basically comes behind it, because they're not out there then picking up the pieces. They just leave it where they are. So we've turned Iraq, for all intents and purposes, into one gigantic nuclear waste dump. And people are now getting extremely sick from it. And the military is not acknowledging this. And they're just, you know, because they feel that they're protecting their troops by giving them the best possible ammunition. But the consequences of those ammunition is dire to the local population, and probably also the soldiers themselves, who we know are coming back with countless types of diseases that we've never seen or heard before. And it just mounts up. There is no overseeing authority for any of this. I think it's all just gone out of complete control. Nobody really has a grasp. The people who do, you know, who are supposed to do these things, perhaps like the Central Intelligence Agency or other oversight committee within the federal government, it's gotten to be a complete world of secrecy. I mean, back in 98, the first thing that I did when I got online is create a website called End Secrecy. And Senator Moynihan at the time had just written a book on secrecy called Secrecy 2 years before he passed away, about, you know, the immense urgency and necessity to start to open up all this information, because since it was all buried, nobody really had all the data and the details necessary to come up with some bird's eye view of what the situation really is. And right now it's pretty much in the hands of the media and investigative reporters like 60 Minutes or other news searching organization to try to give us a good idea. And it's totally inadequate. It's now up to this new generation to pick up all these little pieces and start to follow the breadcrumbs and try to understand what took place because of the Cold War and the National Security Act, which basically made anything that had to do with nuclear energy a matter of national security, which was then to have been classified. So all the necessary information that we need to clean up this mess, to perhaps even recycle nuclear waste, to perhaps even make safe nuclear power plants for all we know, is just buried under layers and layers of compartmentalization. And unless you got super cosmic top secret clearances, you don't have access to the data that's been compiled or gathered. And this is what needs to stop, and we need to have an open society. Right. We lost the Berlin Wall, and now we need to break down the wall that we have between our government and the shadow government, right, which people call the Velvet
Curtain.
Exactly.
I just want to jump in here because we're coming to the end of this, again, very important segment. And here, once again, as in the nuclear weapons area and the nuclear war area, where the extraterrestrial intelligences have reportedly met with a U.S. president, have reportedly intervened to shut down U.S. missile ICBM launching silos as they did at Malmstrom Air Force Base. Here we have them flying over Indian Point nuclear power plant and a number of other nuclear power points. And we really want to thank you, Remy, for bringing this to our attention here and for bringing your and our, I must say, fight to stop the relicensing of Indian Point. We've come to the end here. We've been with Remy Chevalier, who's on the advisory board of FuseUSA.org on extraterrestrials and the environment, nuclear power. This is Exopolitics Radio. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Well, we've been trying to communicate, or we've been communicating, that advanced extraterrestrial ethical intelligence has been signaling to us in an exopolitical context through the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication that nuclear energy, nuclear power, and nuclear weapons are a no-no. Simply put, nuclear technology must be abolished now for the safety of the biosphere, for the safety of our human population and all living things, all animals, all flora, all trees, and for the safety of the dimensional ecology, that is, the multiple dimensions in which the extraterrestrial intelligences themselves live. And this is factually based. We've gone through an honor roll starting in 1944 and working ourselves up to 1964. We still have to go up through 2007, which we'll do at a later date. And at these times, when it's clear that the permanent war economy centered in the United States, there's now increasing evidence and documentation that the foreign policy of the United States is affected by the Israel lobby. There are books that objectively document this. There are books that objectively document that the international banking system is under the control of an Anglo-American international war crimes racketeering organization with a decidedly neo-Zionist agenda. And I don't mean that in a religious sense, I mean that in a political sense. And so it's clear that the extraterrestrial civilizations are objecting to the use of nuclear weapons in this agenda. And just several weeks ago, at the end of August and beginning of September, there were 6 illegal nuclear weapons, allegedly, which were attempted to be hijacked from Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota down to Offutt Air Force Base in Louisiana by a secret command and control circuit, possibly under the control of Vice President Richard B. Cheney and President George W. Bush, both of whom were on the Yale campus at the time that I was there. They were losers then. They're losers now. They were outlaws then. They're outlaws now. So it's clear that extraterrestrial civilizations are making their presence known and saying that no nuclear weapons can be used. So we have to, as ethical exopoliticians ourselves, take stands and say, no, no nuclear weapons. No, no nuclear power. I'm sorry, but that time is gone. This is Exopolitics Radio, which is produced by Phoenix Productions in conjunction with 1480 KPHX, Progressive Talk Phoenix, Executive Producer Richard Romero Sr., Director RV Romero, Producer and Editor Chris Romero. I am your ever-present host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and nuclear power. No, 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 no. No nuclear power. Not ever. Day, week, and life. Thank you.